Aloha, everyone. My name is Healoha Johnston, and I'm the curator of the Arts of Hawaii here at the Honolulu Museum of Art. The museum has partnered with the Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism and Hawaii Public Radio to offer tonight's lecture featuring two speakers, Jasmine Takanikos and Bliss Lau. We do this tonight in conjunction with the exhibition titled Hawaiian Design, which is on view in the Arts of Hawaii Gallery until March 12, 2017, located right upstairs. Bliss and Jasmine's presentation tonight comes after an intense weekend-long workshop with a group of Hawaii-based creative entrepreneurs, writers, designers, and architects among them. The goal? To help small business owners in the creative sector align their brand, their professional identities, with their personal values. Seems simple, but as Steve Jobs says, simple can be harder than complex. You have to work hard to get your thinking clean to make it simple, but it's worth it in the end because once you get there, you can move mountains. Dedicated to supporting the next generation of creative entrepreneurs and thought leaders, Bliss and Jasmine conduct workshops and classes about brand strategy throughout the world. Jasmine Takanikos is the creator of the global workshop and lecture series called Brand Human, centering around the importance of building lasting relationships with one's core constituencies via social media. Through interactive analysis of social media, Takanikos aids in creating and cultivating online brand identities that synergistically align with the client's offline objectives. Bliss Lau is a jewelry designer whose visionary approach to jewelry is intrinsically rooted in the concept of jewelry as a physical experience, inspired by sensuality and structure. Raised in Honolulu and educated at Parsons, Bliss Lau is based in New York City, where she frequently draws inspiration from such diverse sources as the bold writing of Anais Nin, the mathematically precise art of M.C. Escher, and the elegant architecture of the Chrysler Building and the Brooklyn Bridge. Together, Bliss and Jasmine created Centering Your Brand, a first-of-its-kind course taught at Parsons, the New School of Design, where the two teach brand strategy and design classes. They presented a concentrated version of this course as a workshop this past Saturday and Sunday here at the museum. The format for tonight's lecture features a one-hour presentation by Bliss and Jasmine describing their approach to branding, followed by a one-hour Q&A. Please hold on to your questions until after we hear from our guest speakers, at which time Bliss and Jasmine will embark on a robust dialogue with members of the audience. At this time, please join me in warmly welcoming Bliss Lau and Jasmine Takanikos.
Hi, welcome. I'm Bliss, and this is Jasmine.
Hello, welcome. Thank you so much for taking your time to come this evening.
We want to start by thanking DBED, and not all of them are able to be here, but thank you to Georgia Skinner, David Nada, Tracy Young, Timothy Teo, and from the Honolulu Museum of Art. Thank you so much, Hei Aloha, for making this happen, and also Noe Tanigawa from Public Radio. Thank you.
This is the brand of self. I want to talk a little bit about how we got to this work and why this work is important to us. So as Hei Aloha said, I'm a branding and marketing strategist. I've had my own consultancy in New York for 11 years. I've been an educator alongside Bliss for about 7 years. So we think about branding a lot, and I have a methodology I created called Brand Human. And I created this methodology because it really started with teaching. We saw our adult students and adult learners really struggle with, what is my position within my brand? What is my position within my business? What's the difference between personal? What's the difference between professional? There's not a lot of tools out there that talk to you about this, right? A lot of it is that you see in the media is best practice oriented. And I wanted to create something that was much more feeling based. How do I feel about this? How do I feel about the community I'm connected to, the content I build? What does this look like in relationship to my goals? So that's Brand Human. And Centering Your Brand was born from a similar concept.
So to give you a little background on why Jasmine and I are up here today with you, Jasmine and I began teaching at Parsons together about 6 years ago, and it was because I was, if any of you know my background, you know I was a handbag designer before, and I was also teaching an accessory design class at Parsons, and at one point I realized that there is no design without branding, and so I invited Jasmine to join me in the class, and over the course of the last 6 years, we've developed sort of an understanding of what we think people need in terms of this marriage between what it is to have a brand in today's world, whereas before maybe you could just design something and people would come and they would experience it. That isn't the case anymore. There has to be a world around the products that you create.
And then in relationship to that, knowing, you know, how are you going to build content, right? How are you going to connect to your audience? Who is your audience? How are you going to ask yourself critical questions, again, to reach your goals? So this is just a quick slide of Bliss's beautiful work. Wanted to give you some context into what she does and what it looks like. But we have this slide up here for another reason, which is that we all have the responsibility to create and build the container of brand, right? So what does that mean? It means what's around it. It means the copy. It means the visuals. It means the color, right? It means the artistic nature of what you're doing. And it means the business development side of things. So this is an image from a recent lookbook of Bliss's.
And the reason that that image, I think, is important is because it embodies a lot of what I want the feeling of the piece to be, because when you just design something, it's just an object that's sitting in maybe in a store or online. And when you produce a beautiful image that goes with it and it gives you the essence of the power that it can create, and I think when you look at that image, you really feel that if you were to wear that ring, maybe you would be as strong as her. And that's part of the world around the brand that I've tried to create.
And that takes discipline, right? It takes vision, it takes discipline, it takes understanding, and it takes choice of why strength, right? Going through that process. And we really believe that the artistic process needs the brand process, and they really create a beautiful marriage. So I'm going to go into now a little bit about Brand Human and some of the principles. So the first principle here is you live in a world where you are what you share, right? Which is a really interesting, intense thing to say, right? And it's not totally true, right? But it has a moment of truth, which is that perception value is really huge at this point in our lives, right? And how we perceive people is a lot about what happens on your phones, right? We spend so much time on mobile, looking at people's content, connecting with people's content, judging people's content, thinking we understand people via their content. So what does this mean to sort of become what you share? The Brand Human methodology has three pillars. It's always sort of changing because I'm an artist myself as a strategist, right? Thinking about how it's constantly adapting and changing. But the first is to think about relationship to self. What is your relationship to self? What is your relationship to your business? The second is your lifestyle, how your own lifestyle, what you do, how you walk around daily, who you connect to, impacts brand, and what that process is and what those patterns are. The third is strategy and implementation, right? Activating brand strategy and marketing. But first and foremost, again, being in it, understanding why you're doing what you're doing, understanding the networks you're plugging into, how they affect your business, and others. So we are living in a trust economy, right? And I think we all can agree that at this point, word of mouth, referrals, recommendations, understanding of what you bring to the table, how you bring it to the table, trusting you and your deliverables is everything, right? So how do we build in this trust, and how does it become something we're really actively working towards, right? And not from a manipulation marketing place, right? Because both Bliss and I don't believe in that. We believe the new model is about honesty and creativity and value add. So this is the world we're in.
But I have a question for you, Jasmine.
Sure.
On a digital level, how do you see trust being broken in terms of in the media and online?
So trust breaks in a lot of different ways, right? But one example is trust breaks because of inconsistency, right? Where content becomes inconsistent. Content becomes no longer value add. Content becomes highly personal, right? So we all know that person online that uses their status update to tell us about how their day was bad, right? Or who takes a pixelated photo, right? So what does that do to us? How does that change our moment? How does that change our perception value with people, right? It's huge. So within Brand Human, we ask you to connect intimately with self. This doesn't mean with others. This doesn't mean asking everyone their opinion on the kind of content you're trying to build, right? This asks how you actually feel about this content, how connected you are to the work. The second is ego, right? How ego plays into what you share and what you're building, because it does. And it has its place. It's really important. But when it oversteps its boundaries, it can be a huge issue in regards to brand building and business development, right? So we have to know, you know, maybe we created work that we did extremely well, right? And everyone applauded us. But we're only as good as the next thing that we produce, right? So that's the process of knowing when ego has its place, when to feel proud, and then when to retreat again and build work. Are you practicing presence in your work, in your content, in your brand? And what does this mean? Literally means presence. It means not being on your phone every 5 seconds, checking your phone, being distracted. It means practicing the principle of being focused, right? And true focus leads to great work.
And I think as an entrepreneur, this is one of the most important brand human principles, for sure.
Yes. And it can translate in so many ways, right? But it's really hard to find presence these days. Most of what's around us is telling us not to be present, right? We look at Snapchat and Instagram and our text message chains and everything that's pulling us away from presence. But within presence is where you get really good work, the really powerful work, the true engagement. Right, instead of the buzzword of engagement. We build work not only for ourselves. We build work for community, right? And Bliss and I feel this way. This is our opinion, right? But we believe that your work should impact people, and you should think about the impact that it has on others, you know, from even a status update to the actual product you're building. You know, how is community affected? What is the social cause element to what you're doing? Is there one? You know, have you consciously decided to not do something within social cause in your work? Have you decided to align yourself with the cause? What does that look like? But we do this for, we should be building work for someone other than ourselves.
But also the idea of finding a like-minded community. I think as a designer, it's really important to surround yourself with other designers. For myself, I definitely need that because we challenge each other and help each other grow. And I think it's a really important thing to ask yourself who your community is. And maybe they're somewhere far away, or maybe they're somewhere that you can access that's nearby. And I think I have a group of designers who I meet with on like a quarterly basis where we sit down and we really challenge each other and make sure that our business is living up to the ethics that it needs to be, and that we're growing the business in the way that we want to, or that we're taking time just to be creative together, going to museums together. It's a really important part of being a creative person, I think.
Another side of this, we teach this in a much deeper lesson with Centering Your Brand, is how does the competitive landscape affect what you're building, right? So I have a lot of entrepreneurial clients that are a little scared to look at other people's work, or they look at it too much, right? So what is the balance for you? How are you looking at people's work that is similar to you, models that are potentially similar, and instead of looking at it as such a threat, right, how can you be educated by what others are doing and then try to create more original work? Or How do you build that into your strategy, right? Instead of let it affect you again with sort of in an unconscious way. And with tools like Instagram, you could be constantly looking at other people's work all day long. But how is that affecting your own work? Instead of giving yourself dedicated time to look at your competitive landscape and say, interesting, great, you know, at this point, this point, this point, instead of looking at it all day, right? Because you are what you absorb. So if you're looking at other people's work all day long, it's affecting your output. So this says disrupt the system. We ask you within Brand Human to not just unconsciously plug into something because it's popular, both as a business, an entrepreneur, as a person, right? Particularly in social media, when a new tool comes out and it's popular, everyone signs up. Why? Right? It's systemic. It's an issue, right? And, you know, some of us might not be wonderful photographers or understand how to edit a story together for Snapchat, and it might not be relevant on any level for our businesses. So we ask you to think before you just immediately engage.
And creatively, I think this applies to a certain kind of sameness and homogeny that happens in design. To be a designer and a creative person is to ask questions and to solve them and to create new solutions. And that's what gives you a voice as a designer. And disrupting is kind of a key word that everyone uses right now, but I think that that really just goes back to the core of what it is to be a creative person and to have a singular vision and to create something new and fresh and different.
And make a choice versus, again, being manipulated by what others are doing and just because it's popular. Right? We learn that at a very young age, right? But for some reason, as adults, it still is affecting us. So there's never been a time in history where we've been recording our personal narratives like we are now, right? And we're doing this individually. So we have never, ever, as humans, been building a book of self. And now we have a book of self that's happening. So consciously deciding, yes, I'm building a personal narrative that's happening. What's going to be my story? You know, am I looking at principles like the Brand Human principles and applying them? You know, you don't know what the end of your story will be. None of us do. But we can consciously create all of the middle parts of our story. Right? And knowing that that narrative, it is a narrative. It's something we're telling people, right? And now people can go back 6 years on Instagram and look at what Bliss and I have done, our evolution of person, relationship, friendships, aesthetic qualities, choices. This is super intense that that can happen, right? So that affects brand. That affects positioning. The fact that that content is out there live for anyone to take that journey is, you know, is powerful.
And when was the last time you really looked at what you did 6 years ago on Instagram? Have you edited it? Is it maybe some of the things you did then aren't applicable to who you are now? Do you want to keep that online or not? I think that's an important thing to ask yourself.
You know, Bliss and I are interesting partners in work because I'm a branding and marketing strategist. It's what I think about all day. I love what I do. And she's a designer. And she's committed to her process and is genuinely a designer through and through. And as a strategist, I'm always thinking about it and she's always implementing it, right? So we're constantly going back and forth of how does it feel to have to implement and be really accountable to these principles and me going, okay, what is it really relevant to my clients right now? The principle of alone, it's quite simple. Goes back to this idea of love of self, right? Respect for self. How often are we actually alone any longer, right? Anymore, you know? And how often does the idea of alone feed its way into our process? Because, you know, we can have opinion by formal committee or informal committee. And a lot of us have opinions by informal committee, right? And as a strategist, I think all of my clients should have an advisory board, right? But sometimes those advisory boards are your friend, the person that's constantly commenting on the photo, the person that's liking the photo, right? Not liking the photo, even more, how that affects you, right? So when was the last time you stepped away from your business and your brand to really think about, are you doing what you want to be doing? Is this true to self? Does it touch community? How does it affect people? It can be really, really interesting when you do that.
As someone with a really active lifestyle and business, I find that alone, this slide is one of the things that I'm most affected by because I don't always realize when I need to go and take the time to be alone. if you are in a moment of creativity and you feel stagnant, the reality is maybe you need to just sit down. All of my best ideas and all of my best concepts are about 4 or 5 hours deep in a moment of being by myself, and maybe I'm procrastinating doing something different. But that's, I think, really when it becomes really fertile and your creativity really grows.
You know, I get this question a lot in both in our class and in my business, but there's a lot of people that are coming to me that they're a printmaker, they're a copywriter, and they really love dance, right? And they've been told their whole life, you got to do one thing to do it well. Well, actually, if you position it correctly and you use the different things you love as a dynamic human being to feed the other things, you're stronger. You know, when I paint or draw, which isn't something I publicly really talk about, I often come up with really brilliant strategies for my clients, right? But I allow myself to do it, but it doesn't mean I have to become it, right? So what is that for you in the positioning dialogue? What's private? What's public? What helps your process? What builds your process? Just because you start doing something, it doesn't make you, right? Love of self, which we went into a bit. Very obvious, but very important. Doing this because you respect self. So building story through experience versus making it up. So I oftentimes see people come to me, and I do when I do brand strategy work, I'll look at obviously the brand from start to finish, and if this is a pre-existing brand or a brand a client wants to build. But I always look at the story that's already there. Because there's always a story. There's always a narrative that's been built versus building a story that doesn't exist. And when we have to build a story that doesn't exist for social media content strategy, for advertising campaigns, for whatever it is, it becomes quite confusing, right? It can often just also feel totally ingenuous, right, or ingenuine. And then what do you have? You don't have engagement on the other side of that. Right? Because we're becoming more and more clear about who's lying to us, who's telling the truth, who cares, who doesn't care. Right? So if you're struggling with what your narrative looks like or what your positioning looks like, I would encourage you to actually look at the story you're living.
Yeah, and when was the last time you really, every single person that's through this, when was the last time you really sat down and asked yourself, what is my story? Have I really put it together and thought about it? If someone was to ask you right now, what would you say? I think that for me, I have a very hard time doing that. I think visually, so sometimes I just write down bullet points and have somebody help me put it together so that I can create the best version of that for communication purposes. But I think it's a really important thing, especially if you have it on your website or just to tell the history of who you are.
And even if you're not a copywriter, right? Because mm-hmm. not all of us are writers. Like, Bliss thinks visually, right? So you can build story from visuals very, very easily, but you have to work on it. You have to think about it. And then what does it become? It becomes a content strategy. It becomes more organic. Doesn't become so sticky.
But the process of doing so also brings you back to your roots. And creatively, where you started is oftentimes where you're always going to be. So it's something to think about.
Adding value. I don't believe that we should be doing any work in this world unless it adds value. So it's pretty honest. But thinking about your value point, so I have all my clients work through this exercise. What is your value? Where is it landing? How is it going to grow? Do you have it? Have you thought about value principles in your business? We all need that, no matter what we're selling, offering, service-based businesses, product-based businesses, we all need to add value. And even more so when we're looking at our content strategy, our advertising strategies, our communication strategies should add value, right? This didn't always used to be the case, but we're fighting against so much white noise that it absolutely has to be where we're coming from. Living a life curated. So we are all now in the role of curator on some level. Right, whether it be we're personally curating our content in ourself, or we're curating it for others or a business or a company, but we are. So looking at your points of curation, looking at your visuals, looking at your copywriting, right? Looking at every point that communicates with others and how that thread comes together and what is consistency and where is there consistency. And again, moving back to how are you building trust? And this looks different for all of us. For some of us, it's a little bit more casual. You know, it's fun, it's open. For some of us, it's very serious and it's points and so on, you know. But we all have to understand this is our role now. So what are our responsibilities? Aesthetic responsibility. So this comes down to every point of our person. We have an aesthetic responsibility to our work, to our brand, and to ourselves and to our community. We even talk about this as in your style, right? So some of you think, oh, that's vacuous. You know, she's talking about style. No, style is a communication language. It's language. It's communication. It says something about how you feel about self. It says how you feel about others. It's absolutely very powerful, right? So looking at the points of aesthetic responsibility in your brand, in your person, in your office, in the experience you give your clients, right? So aesthetics is they're it's a powerful way to think, and it's not a casual way to think. It's very important.
I recently had an interesting experience with this slide because I walked into my design studio and realized that I had all of these books, and they were all these different colors and magazines sitting on a shelf, and I felt like I was being aesthetically irresponsible to myself because I was looking at all of these colors and these things and they just didn't go with what I needed to see to be creative in my studio. So I actually turned all the books around so that you can only see the white pages. It was just that moment where I wasn't giving myself mental space to be creative. I mean, when was the last time you walked into a space that you've been living in for 5 or 6 years and really asked yourself, is this the best place for me to have creative ideas?
Yeah, and what needs to change? So Bliss brings up a really good point. It's like, what's the aesthetic responsibility to self, right? In space design, you have so many entrepreneurs now talking about space design, culture design, right? How that impacts the bottom line and the deliverables from your employees. Over curation and intimidation of self. So this is the flip side of what we're just talking about. This is positioning the self and the human as unhuman. Right, so really I'm just going to give a quick point around this, which is Pinterest. So the reason why I created this principle is because I saw both my students and clients coming to me, showing me all of these incredible Pinterest boards, right? And I'm like, this is wonderful, but when are you going to do the work? So it's great that you have a really beautiful feed and that you really want to go to Greece and be on a catamaran. But you know what's going to get you to Greece on a catamaran? Doing the work. When no one's watching. And when no one's liking. Right? The company you keep. This is an offline strategy. It applies to online. But really, as an entrepreneur, who you surround yourself with is what your work becomes. So looking at the people around you, do they tell you you're incredible all the time? Do they give you really good critiques? Do they talk about the same subjects every week? Do you go and you have drinks with the same person with that same looping conversation? That same looping conversation becomes your work. So we actually can't afford to do that as entrepreneurs. We have to constantly be evaluating our time, who we're spending it with, how it's affecting us, how it's affecting our goals. And this isn't being insensitive, right? But it's being honest. And sometimes honesty is intense, especially as adults, because we have to edit people. We have to decide not to spend our time with people any longer, right? Or we have to decide to spend time with different people or diversify our time.
Who are the last few people who you met that you wish that you could see more, that you think would engage you? And isn't there a conversation that you hope that you could have with somebody who you don't know that well? I think that there's a part of this with the vulnerability of reaching out to make new friends that really, really is important in growing your creative process and bringing different people in who can challenge you in different ways.
Allies in life and allies in business. You know, we no longer can afford the luxury, and I'm not sure if this was a luxury, but, you know, to check in at 9 a.m. and check out at 6 p.m. as one person, and from 6 p.m. till you go to bed, you're another person, right? We're that same person that we show up to and, you know, present our client, our deliverables, that we are at dinner, and we should be, and we need to think about that, right? And that this is our it is truly a lifestyle we're living as entrepreneurs and business building business and intrapreneurs, right? People within an organization where you're really owning what you do. At this point, we're all either one of those, I think. Tribe mentality, right? So there's so many different definitions of tribe or how people think about tribe or transcribe tribe. And we really think about tribe as, who are you building towards? Who's your person? Who's your ideal person? Who do you want to see in your brand, participate in your brand, like your brand, be interested in your brand? And this should be a real person, not an archetype of a person, right? This should be someone you can point to that has habits and patterns and interests. They should be a real, live, living person. Sphere of influence. So I think of your sphere of influence in a little bit of a different way than the definition that's out there. I think of it as people who will call you back, right? So usually 1,500 people on Facebook won't call you back, right? So if we really identify the people that will call you back, one, two, potentially share your message or will help you get to the next step of where you need to go. So from a brand human standpoint, this is about, as entrepreneurs, we all need support, we all need advisors, we all need community, right? But the amount of followers you have can be useful and it has its place, but when was the last time you dialed down really who you feel your true sphere is? People that support your work. Boundaries. So this is a big one. This always tends to be a pretty powerful principle in every talk that I give in the classes that we teach together. So where do boundaries come into your work? Let's take, for example, just social media and posting, right? And putting work out into the world and status updates. Have you thought about what you've chosen to share and how that'll affect your relationship with someone? What they know about you? How they feel about you? How they want to work with you? Do you need to show your relationship? Do you want to show your relationship? Has that been a conscious decision? Or has that been an automated decision? You know, I always kind of talk about one example that I think is powerful around boundaries, which is when I send client emails. So I don't send clients email at midnight. Why don't I do that? Because it's irresponsible. Because I haven't been asked into their home at midnight. We don't have a meeting at midnight. Right? So I actually change the work. I shift the work. I shift the perception of the work. I shift how they think about the work when I send an email at midnight. Online and offline integration. You know, your goals online should be the same offline, and those two things should meet, right? And we should really be thinking about, from a strategic standpoint, that everything we want offline is what we want online as well, right? And this even feeds into what we want personally and what we want professionally. So I work with a lot of clients that aren't in line here. And when you're not in line with what you want personally, one side loses, and professionally one side loses, right? And then you're never truly happy with where you made it personally or professionally, because the two don't come together. So creating a list and saying, this is what I want to see happen personally. This is what I want to see happen professionally. And see if they meet up. Because then you'll know, right? Then you'll know, okay, I'm going to make that goal happen. Oh, these two goals can't happen simultaneously because they don't work together. They don't speak to each other. They don't make sense together. Judgment and what people think of you. So this is a big one with sharing content, sharing information, putting your business out there. You know, at the same time that people are judging you, they're also forgetting that they just judged you, right? So this was a principle that was actually created in Hawaii a few years back when Bliss and I were working together and we were chatting and I was saying, you know, God, that's really scary to put your work out there, you know, and this is something she's done, you know, since she graduated. She's been constantly putting her work out there and constantly having people say this or that. And she said, yeah, but they kind of forget that they judge you after they judge you. And I went, oh, right, that's right. It happens 24 hours a day. It's a constant cycle of judgment and forgetting. It's a constant cycle. So if you let judgment go into the work and you let the fact that people are going to judge you, which isn't critique, because critique is very different. It has its place. You really, you make the work dull, right? Because then you're like, oh, what is she going to think and he going to think? That's not strategy. That's not critique. That's fear. Hashtag is king and strategy is queen. I just want to go into a few logistical points here. And again, there's lots of different ways to think about this because you all have different brands and different businesses, but I just want to talk about it in relationship to your person. So I believe that we all need to be creating custom hashtags for the work that we're building. And I believe that for a few different reasons. One, if you're creating a custom hashtag, you're able to start logging content under that hashtag. It also contextualizes the content you're putting forward, right? So I launched the Brand Human Instagram very recently, but before that, it was under Jasmine Takanikos. And I thought, you know, I have a Pomeranian, and I like to post photos of my cute Pomeranian in New York City sometimes because that's who I am too, you know? But that's certainly not Brand Human, right? And the differentiation points are important. And I need you to understand and think a different way and go into a different place when I post under Brand Human than when I post my Pomeranian or me on vacation or whatever it is, right? So developing that custom hashtag allows you to do that, allows immediate filter in how you're looking at content. And then there's the contextual hashtags. You know, how am I going to put context to the work and the content you're putting out there? Oh, I understand you were at a seminar. It's about branding, marketing. Oh, I see the affiliate partners. Oh, you're at the Honolulu Art Museum. It's a nice way to use hashtags to add context to the photo I'm looking at, right? I believe everybody should have a hero network from a social media standpoint. So probably everyone in this room has multiple social networks, and that's fine. But we really can only do one very well, and I actually do believe we should do one very well. And this is a point where if you put your energy into one social network, again, it's social, it's connected, it's person to person, that's where you're going to really help your overall brand strategy. So determining your hero network based on, one, your talent bank, you know, are you able to take a great photo? Do you have that perspective? It's a talent. You know, filter won't fix that. If you don't, how are you going to manage that if Instagram does need to be your hero network? You know, when was the last time you really decided, okay, here's where Instagram is going to fit into my strategy. Here's how much time I'm going to put into it. Here's the engagement I hope to get. And then there's just quickly contextual networks, right? So we're probably all on Facebook, right? But how does that actually feed into your brand strategy based on your hero network? And maybe your hero network is Facebook, depending on what you're doing. So I just wanted to quickly cover social media and the fact that all social media networks need separate attention to activate, right? They're not automated. They're social, right? They have to be genuine. They have to be authentic. They have to be real. You really have to be intentional about what you're doing. So looking at Instagram and looking at the fact that you now have stories, right? Video feeds that you can put together where you can loop me through an entire narrative of a day, 2 days, when you deletes in 24 hours, but and your posts. So how are those two things going to talk to each other? When are you going to use the stories versus when are you going to use stills? Right? Because they're two different things. We think about it with the stories as, and we were talking about this in Centering Your Brand this weekend, when you really have a story to tell, right? Because not every day is a story. Like your coffee, your dog, your process, your friend, the street photo, that's actually not a story, right? But maybe going to Hawaii, meeting with the Honolulu Art Museum, having the honor to meet the curator, like moments of process and thinking, like that's maybe a story, right? So moments that are bigger and need documentation, because if we're constantly making everything a story, stories have no meaning. Snapchat. We had a really interesting thing happen in our class probably a year ago with a student and Snapchat. And Snapchat has its place. It's a very important network, right? It's a very important network specifically to media. But he said to me, you know, I can use Snapchat because deletes in 24 hours and I don't really, no one can go back and see my content, so I can kind of be whoever I want to be on Snapchat. I said, oh, that's so interesting. But you know what Bliss and I have? We have memories. You know? And guess what our memory is telling us? It's saying we're never going to hire you because of what we saw on Snapchat. This is real, though. It's fascinating that because people think that things delete, they didn't affect us, right? That we're not building perception, value, and character based on your content. And also, it never deletes. It's on a server somewhere. It's there. It's around, right? Twitter. We all know that Twitter is going through a lot right now, trying to sort of figure out what it means to us, what it means to the marketplace. But where Bliss and I still find it extremely useful is that, number one, it's incredible with SEO, search engine optimization, so we have to look at it from a logistical standpoint. But we also look at it as an internal content feed. So I work with clients across a lot of different verticals, luxury real estate, fashion, wellness, beauty, jewelry. And there's no place for me to go to follow all of these different editors and different magazines and different places where I can get sound bites that are relevant to the industries I work in, right? It's also an incredible place to connect to editors and seeing what editors are saying versus the publication. LinkedIn, this is your professional CV, right? This is your online CV. This is your professional positioning. You need to make sure it's up to date, filled out, and living in a way that makes sense. Some of you will use it every single day within your brand strategy. Some of you will just let it sit there, but making sure that it's up to date, your bio photo is up to date. I'm not looking at something from 25 years ago. Because if I'm looking at something from 25 years ago, you immediately become irrelevant, right? And Brand Human is an ageist. One of the reasons I started Brand Human is because I believe that we needed to look at things with all generations. But if you get scared about updating something because you don't totally know what it looks like or how it feels and you don't get the information around it, that is when you become dated. When we stop learning, we become dated. It doesn't matter what age we are. Facebook, you know, is it a family network to you? Do you drive advertising, sponsored posts? How do you use it, right? It's one of our first, still one of the most powerful. Emerging networks. We believe that you should register your name for all emerging networks that may be important to your business. It doesn't mean you need to start plugging away and building content on them, but so that you own your name. Right, you have it, so you don't have to go back and deal with a naming issue. And just to sort of formalize this point further, like we talked about, determine contextual networks. Why are you choosing to engage and how do they serve your brand? Because not all networks truly serve. Right? So it's better for you to disengage from networks than to stay engaged on all of them poorly. Right? It doesn't help you to have a Twitter account that hasn't been updated in 3 years. What does it do? It makes me look at it and go, is he lazy? Does he not care about? Right? You don't want me to do that. You don't want people to do that, right? So just delete it. If you can't engage with it properly and put it in your strategy and make sure that content is flowing through there in a way that makes sense, you just don't need to have it. So many of our businesses are dealing with that, right? Because you were told to be on every single network and now you have to update every single network. And that just causes a lot of spin, a lot of anxiety, and the ROI in that is usually zero, right? Because you're spread really thin. You're not building one network enough. You're not putting enough energy into one. This is just funny. For those listening, this says don't die by your selfie. This is mainly just as entrepreneurs and intrapreneurs, you know, be careful with where selfies come into your strategy, right? And they all have their place, right? I love a good selfie. We all do. But a selfie can also, and lots of selfies from a content strategy standpoint, can show a lot of insecurity, right? And that's just something we don't really want to show as entrepreneurs and intrapreneurs. We want to have a boundary there. So you're creating your future client, customer connection now. Not tomorrow, but now. So thinking about the fact that every moment you're connecting with people and you're putting content out into the world, you're building connection. And a client may hire you in 5 years because they've been watching you for 5 years, but it might not happen for 5 years, right? So we have a tool we're working with where the ROI isn't a snap, right? It's a build. I have a client recently that has been following me for about that long that just hired us on a huge project. So I built enough trust. It took a long time. He's been watching a long time, and now he has the need. He came to my firm. Right? But these are the subtleties we're working with.
And I think that speaks towards aesthetic responsibility and consistency as well in how you're showcasing your work and showing yourself online.
I just want to touch on quickly the power of the subconscious. It is more influential than your experience tells you, and it is the secret author of many choices and judgments that consumers make. So again, this point landing that even if someone can't tell you why they didn't hire you, they can't really tell you. It's probably because their subconscious brain has been absorbing poor content. Right? Because the subconscious, again, is an incredible author of judgment. So that's why we really have to understand, you know, what we're doing and why we're doing it. If we look at how a lot of people use social for, you know, we're really in a really intense time politically, right? And a lot of us want to talk about it online. But I would encourage you to think about how much you talk about it, when you talk about it, how you talk about it, and is it self-serving? Is it value add? Is it informative? Because those decisions, again, are high impact. So your beliefs, we just have a couple questions for you around your beliefs to ask yourself, because you are a brand, right? This conversation is brand of self. Is it true, certain beliefs you have about your brand? If you ask yourself, is this literally true? Can you prove it that it's true? Does it support your business and brand? Who are you without this potential truth? Right? So we often have a dialogue as entrepreneurs that loop. We're not going to be this, or we are this, or people think this. I encourage you, you know, when you leave here, and Bliss and I do this a lot with our businesses and brands, what things do we think about constantly and consistently? And we ask ourselves, is this true? Right? Can we prove it? Does this benefit us? And what would we do without thinking that way? Does it serve? Okay.
So we'd like to introduce Noe Tanigawa.
Oh, thank you. Could we give a hand to Bliss Lau and Jasmine Tucker, please? Thank you both so much. They've designed this moment specifically so that we can put our heads together and really talk about what it is that we've been working with. I'd like to start things off if I could, and that is with you, Bliss. The question of judgment, how do you answer the questions about judgment that guide you for, let's say, what you post and how active you are in social media?
I think that judgment was the reason why I didn't have social media for a long time. Obviously, I do now. But it can be really debilitating when you're about to post something and when you want to... I think that judgment can be really debilitating, you know, when you are a designer or you're a creative person, and I'm exposing myself to people in a way that can be really scary. And I think it comes back to knowing that I believe in what I do. And I reached a point when I first started making jewelry, and I've had so many different experiences when I first launched my body chain collection, for instance. And there was a group of women who, when I first showed them my work, I was so proud of it, and they looked at me and they laughed and were like, oh, my clients would never wear that. And I think that the only thing that I thought was that they were wrong. And I think that was the moment when I stopped caring, because I just decided I was going to believe in myself.
Mm-hmm. And believing in yourself, how do you know what, for example, to post and what not to post? How many Twitter accounts do you have? Do you maintain your own Instagram account?
I do maintain my own Instagram account. And I'll take, 100 pictures and look through it. And I think it has a lot to do with where I am now in this moment. And sometimes something is relevant to me today that wasn't relevant to me yesterday. And I think it's really just a question of, like, what do I want to say to the world today? What am I feeling is happening to me? You know, I think social media has a lot to do with what you're going to give to the world. And I try really, really hard to think about something that would inspire people, something that inspires me. Be it a image of, I have an obsession with the Brooklyn Bridge. So oftentimes I'll look at it every single day and then just have a moment where I'm like, oh, everyone else doesn't get to see that every day. Like, mm-hmm. I look out my window and I see it. So I'll post that because I'll just think about who's listening and who's watching.
Mm-hmm. What do you try to anticipate how they'll respond?
That's impossible.
Yeah. How do you deal with that one, Jasmine? How should we, is that a question? How are people going to respond to this?
I think if you follow the brand human principles that we talked about, right, you end up integrating authenticity in your strategy, and you don't really worry so much about the outcome because you have, smart strategic guidelines that you follow. You also think deeply about boundaries, right? And you think about community, you think about impact. So your content is built from that place, and that it's really powerful. I think you brought up a very good point and question to Bliss around, do you manage your own social media account, right? Because there's companies and agencies that create social media accounts for other people, and I think we have to look long and hard at that, right? And does that work? I think sometimes it does, and sometimes it's odd, right? That there's a voice that isn't one voice, that there's just content for content's sake. And I'm not saying that's always the case, but a lot of times that is the case, right? So how are we building in authenticity in everything we do, both as a brand, as a person, as a brand of self?
Who out here has an Instagram account? Just about everyone. How do you manage it? Do you put only personal things on there? Do you put only things that maybe your artwork? Only your artwork? Yeah.
Yes, I thought to ask you about Instagram post-it, because first I made my Instagram for my personal, for myself, for my friends. But now I have some person who I don't know, and now I'm thinking, is it interesting for them to see my brothers or cousins or my home? And yes, and I think how to separate this information, or maybe not post it at all and send directly to my friends.
I'm wondering, are you supposed to be providing something particular for your new audience?
Yes, and I made my Instagram for my brand, and I posted just images of my design. But I thought to make the third personal account. I don't know.
So, recommendations.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's hard to answer that without knowing what you do. Can you tell me what your brand is?
Oh, excuse me.
Can you tell us what your brand is and what the concept is around it?
It's a brand called Razuvan. It's my last name, and I will present my collection of handbags in Fashion Week Marketplace. And now, actually, I'm experienced designer, fashion designer from Russia, and I have many customers who knows me very close and interested in my product and creation. But I'm not famous in Hawaii, for example. And I don't think people from Hawaii are interested in my Russian photos or something like that.
Well, I don't know, yeah. You know, that you can argue with that, right? So that comes down to subtlety, right? Is the photo of you in Russia with family in the same aesthetic line and value as the way you've shot your handbag? Right, because people are interested in access, people are interested in process, people are interested in story. As a designer, if you're directly connected to your designs and it's your name or it's something close to your name, or then they absolutely can connect, and they can absolutely be helpful to each other, because people are interested in makers, creators, creatives, how they got there, you know. Just a story of a handbag over and over can get quite dull.
But right? I also think that if you, you know, why do you want to post a picture of your family? Do you have a handbag line because your family encouraged you to do it? Did your grandmother used to teach you how to sew? Is that something that you could write into the copy of your post? Because if it is, I would love to see that.
Yeah.
If I followed you.
Story, right?
Maybe not every single post, but here and there, absolutely.
And maybe it's one post of your family and not five, right? One post of an event, not five. I think that's always really helpful and interesting. Like when we go, how much of this do we need to show? What's the interesting part? Okay. Yeah, thank you.
How many have Twitter accounts here?
Poor Twitter.
For Twitter.
Well, but many follow Twitter. Maybe you don't have an account, but how many follow Twitter pretty well, pretty closely? Mm-hmm. You're still finding it a very useful platform, at least for receiving information, or do you also post as frequently as you used to, Jasmine, really?
So to be honest, I'm actually rarely on Twitter itself now. I'll go on there once a week just for relevant content, like I said. Mm-hmm. But I do actually post quite a few of my pieces of content from Instagram onto Twitter, and it's not an auto post. I don't believe we should ever set up something to auto post, because not every photo on Instagram makes sense for my Twitter strategy. But because they do talk to each other, hashtags and tagging accounts, right? It's helpful. Like when, you know, we have an alliance with the Honolulu Art Museum and, you know, public radio, we want to use those hashtags and use their accounts so that they can then repurpose the content, and there's alliances that are shown. So I am, you know, both Bliss and I are active on it because, again, we believe from an SEO standpoint, it's important. It still is relevant. It still has its place.
I use Twitter. Actually, I started using Twitter more recently than before because Instagram has become really curated. You can post things on Instagram, but you can't just casually post something random on Instagram anymore. There was a time when that was okay, but I don't think that's the case anymore for someone with a brand that has a certain aesthetic and you're representing it, going back to aesthetic responsibility. But I use Twitter for like a moment this morning when I said, hey, everybody come, you know, come into the Brand of Self talk that we're doing. That's when I posted on Twitter. Or if I am thinking of a piece of poetry that I want to post and just think that it's something I want to share with the world that isn't necessarily something that would make sense on Instagram, because Instagram is my hero network. I also use it for locations and places to inform people where I'll be and invite them to join me. So that's something that I use Twitter and Facebook for, but Twitter more.
Because it's copy rich, right? It's writing, and we used to teach that sort of if Twitter was going to appeal to you and be important to you, you should know how to write short form copy. It's only a certain amount of characters, right? So that needed to be part of your talent set. Right? And if you can't do that, then maybe you shouldn't be on it, right? Because it becomes confusing. But, you know, I think that it's a real... This is why this conversation in centering your brand and brand human is really fascinating to Bliss and I, because the curriculum constantly changes. The questions we ask are constantly changing. The, you know, points of engagement that we see are constantly shifting. So it's fascinating.
We knew that this night actually has much more to do with almost living today in a social media age, and that's why I'm so glad so many of you have come tonight. I don't know what point you're at in your relationship with social media, or perhaps maybe you came because of this branding issue, which really is kind of an introspective process that they're encouraging us to do. Is it more the branding part that you might like to hear a little bit more on? Yeah. The question is about branding versus the whole idea of niches and trends that come and go.
I love this question. So how do you let trend affect brand, right, and affect output is really what you're saying, right? And I think that trends are important because they're insight, right? They're working for a reason. And what defines a trend? A lot of people are doing it or using it or are participating in it, right? So it has its place. It really has its place in your strategy and its insight. But if you chase a trend and you become the trend fully, you expire, right? So you can never let your brand fully become trend. It's very dangerous, right? Because trends come and go. So ideally, you want to be looking at, again, what's authentic, what's potentially, quote-unquote, original, or what's new to you. What are you educating your client around that you're interested in, right, that could become a trend? But if you're chasing trends, you're always going to lose.
I think it's a question of identity and knowing yourself. Because if you define who you are as a company, what your architecture firm, what the pillars of your architecture firm are, then occasionally a trend will come in, it'll flow in, you'll benefit from it, it'll
sure.
move on, and then you'll still have you. And in the end, I have a complicated relationship with trend, because I've had a lot of times when I was early, which is kind of devastating because you did it first and then it didn't hit and then something happens 2 years later. But I think trends can be really, really valuable and wonderful to be a part of as well.
Yeah, you know, they have their place, right? But you know, what I see a lot of times in the branding work that I do is the company will be like, but this is such a huge opportunity, we have to chase it. Maybe, right? But you still have to figure out what's authentic to you and what your differentiation points are, right?
But if, well, I can only speak for myself as a designer, but like if I try and catch that trend, if I see the trend and it's actively happening, it's already too late.
Yeah.
There's no chasing it anymore. But in regards to having a niche, I think that's something that creates tremendous loyalty, and it's a really, really wonderful thing as well.
Yeah, niches, so. That's the other part of your question, right? Or having a niche and knowing your niche is something that I've definitely gone through in my work, because I work with so many different companies, right? And the end product isn't always what matters to me. There's a lot of things that apply to many different worlds and verticals in which I work in. But being niche has its value as well, right? But I think that the same thing is how you work trends in and understand them versus how you work your niche in and evolve that niche. Because you have to like constantly evolve as a company, I think now, especially in our current economic model where everything is breaking. You know, Bliss and I talk about this a lot. Like, we believe, I mean, and I guess I'll say this for myself, but I believe every model we have out there is breaking. I believe the financial model is breaking. I believe the political model is breaking. I believe the advertising model is breaking. And there's a lot of room for new ways to do things. So, you know, as long as you stay open to shifting and evolution, I think having a niche is powerful too, you know?
I would encourage you and your firm to really sit down and ask yourself some really deep questions about who you are and who you want to be aesthetically, because I think that'll inform the pleasure that you get out of the work that you do. Because if you're doing something because it's a trend and you don't like the trend, what's the point?
Yeah. And if you don't care, no one else really will, you know.
Fabulous question. What would some of those first questions be when you sit down to center yourself on your brand?
You know, what is the world that I'm building around what I'm doing is the first one.
Second would be, who are your people? You know, who are your living, breathing people, and why should they be brand loyal? Why are you interested in having them be brand loyal? What are they doing? How are you going to engage with them? You know, I think in our Centering Your Brand course, we really, really look at why are you doing the work you're doing, and then how are you going to activate that work?
One of my favorite things to ask students is, what's your perfect world scenario of what your company could be? Because that is sort of the basis of which, like, the path to your achieving your goals leads.
And it's real world, right?
Wait, what are some of those paths? I mean, what are you seeing? What are people seeing?
It depends on the industry, you know? Mm-hmm. It so depends on... that there isn't one right path, right? And what we do with Centering Your Brand and why it's such a powerful course is that you can be an architect, you can be a jewelry designer, you can be in finance and starting a handbag collection. It doesn't matter what you're making. These larger principles apply, right? How do trends affect brand? How do you look at new models within the business structure and in the economic structure? Where do your content points lie? Like, mm-hmm. This is why centering your brand works, right? Because all of us in these different industries have to ask ourselves these questions, and continuously, it doesn't stop.
Yeah, one of the basis of us creating the class is that this is the way that we do the class is through a Socratic method, and so it's a constantly, you're sitting there and you go through a series of questions that you ask yourself, and I think that's something that no matter who you are and what you're doing, you have to do annually, because we change every year. I'm a different person than I was last year, therefore my business is growing in different ways than it was last year.
We were talking about that, you know, last November I was doing my first Brand Human day-long seminar, right? And since then I've held 16 Brand Human seminars, and I am not the same person. I'm just fundamentally not. But why? Because I've done more and more work, right? I've come closer to my process, and in a year I won't be the same person that's sitting on this stage, right? And that's the responsibility Bliss and I feel we have as entrepreneurs and also as educators, is that we're constantly looking at what's working and what's not working. We're constantly doing self-critiques.
Are we going to leave here feeling the same beset people, feeling like we're going to be approaching our own brand with the same problems? This is our opportunity now to try to make sure that when we leave here, we will be handling it in a different way. And I'm so thankful to have you both here. I guess I go back to, you know, aesthetic principles and realizing that when you tie your work to community, those aesthetic principles still apply.
I mean, I believe that when you tie your work to community, they apply in a huge way, right? Because you're affecting community and community growth and development. We all need to understand that we're in community, even though there's massive trends toward, you know, self-development, self-content, constantly being on our mobile phone, right? But we are in community, and the more, you know, we're closely connected to community, understand how we affect community, the more we have, of course, aesthetic responsibilities to them and responsibilities offline and online. You know, we implemented an exercise in our class that was so powerful this last year that we've both been just like kind of our mind that's been blown from it, which is this idea of starting our course with what is your ask and what is your offer, right? So coming to a learning environment and coming to a community environment and saying, yeah, I have an ask, right? I need this. This is what I'm looking to learn. This is what I'm looking to build. And I can offer this, right? Because you need to know both sides of it, right? And when the ask and offer happens, what happened with our class? Suddenly, community happened really quickly, right? It was a really beautiful thing to watch because people were in their power because they had to identify, oh, yeah, I'm a student. I'm sitting here learning, but I actually have something to offer too, so I'm stepping to the role of teacher as well. At the same time, I'm stepping in the role of student. And Bliss and I think of teaching that way. That's why we're committed to teaching, because every time we teach, we learn, right? We grow. We understand our process so much better.
Is there anyone here who might like, who would be willing to maybe just bounce back a couple of questions and answers with Bliss and Jasmine now? Maybe you've got a brand or a business that you're working on, and sure.
So if you are, let's say you have different sectors to your business, and let's say you have, you know, market X, market Y, and market Z, and each has its own character. So how do you brand your company, generically speaking, if you have these three different components that might be very much different?
So you build container, right? I like to talk about this idea of container. So if you have three components of brand, there needs to be one brand and the ethos of a brand that can hold all three of those components, right? So that larger ethos may be a little loosely defined, but it holds all three of the service models. You know, you can't fundamentally manage three separate brands as one person well. You just can't, right? So if they're not serving each other and there isn't strategies that make sense to each other, which there probably are because that's why you have them, there is a strategy that exists to contain them.
What do you do? What is your business? And what's your name?
My name is Drew Hennemy. I work for an architect and an interior designer. So in a lot of those instances, you know, you have your commercial market, then you have your retail market, and you have your residential market. Yeah. And a lot of times there's conflict within that. You know, the person that leads residential wants the firm to perceive this way, and then the person that does the healthcare wants to be perceived another way. Mm-hmm. So,
well, a lot of that, too, comes down to, like, internal politics, right? So in mediation, and I do a lot of mediation strategy, and that actually really has to be handled. Because if that's happening internally, that is a management issue, but it's a branding issue. And you're very smart to talk about that, because ultimately if one person isn't the ally for the other piece of the business and only an ally for their piece of the business, it affects brand, right? It affects perception. So they're talking to their client all about
how incredible the residential arm of the business is, and they don't mention the commercial arm, they don't mention the retail arm. Maybe that client has connections to someone in retail, right? So how everyone is talking about the brand and living the brand and looking at the brand guidelines, if that's happening internally, it's usually because you need some internal structure and mediation work. Of course, thank you.
Yes. Budgeting branding is the question. How much to invest in that?
So, and I'll let Bliss think about this as well, because, you know, she's actively having to do this daily, and I'm actively putting budgets together for my client and some proposals. What kind of business do you have?
I have a commercial construction.
Commercial construction.
So, you know, fortunately, there's a lot of agencies and strategists that will work smarter and smaller with businesses and entrepreneurs, myself included. And you really want to look at budget based on need, right? So logo and design and, you know, when did you put money into that and how does that look, right? Because a logo can cost you $1,500, $5,000, $50,000, half a million, right? There's lots of different budgets for these things. So I would encourage you to sit down with a strategist and look at every point that you know you'll need to potentially spend on, and then look at it in order of priority, and then determine budget from that, right? So I like to work with entrepreneurs in phases so that you're not doing this huge spend immediately, because that's really stressful on a small to medium-sized business, that you're spending strategically. Because also, too, say you spend on website and logo design, and in a year, your services have slightly shifted, right? So that kind of needs to be updated, and then there's maybe an experiential strategy. Or, you know, so everyone has to think of budget differently, but thinking about it in phases, understanding that, you know, design is king, right? You absolutely must invest in branding, in design. Yes.
Can I follow up with that?
Yeah, of course.
How important is a website these days?
It's a great question. Still vital.
Super important. It's one of the only, if you think about this, like, you don't own Instagram. You don't own Facebook. That you didn't design that site. You have an opportunity to have a totally immersive experience in your company. When someone goes to your website, they can understand, and that's where trust comes in. You know, that way they look at it, they can see, they can trust you, they can understand how you work. They'll trust and understand the way that your business runs by how you manage your navigation. There's still so much information that is subconscious that happens when someone goes to your website.
And we talk about in centering your brand, one of our lessons is the wireframing lesson, right? So if you don't have a website, what you don't go through is understanding service models, methodology, process, right? So you absolutely have to have a website, and you have to go through the process of building that website to actually understand the brand you're building and the services you have. And then to Bliss's point, you know, I have this principle, I believe in my URL. I believe every single person here should own their name as a URL. Whether or not you build a site is kind of not that big of a deal, but owning it if you want to, or if you want to redirect it to your website so that when people Google your name, it goes to your brand site, right? So as an entrepreneur and the owner of the business, you absolutely want to build a website for various reasons, but really strategically to understand what you're doing.
If you haven't already, I would encourage you to work with a branding agency. I did it recently for a rebrand. Maybe it was about 3 years ago. And essentially what that means is they'll tell you they'll maybe redesign your logo. They'll tell you what font to use. They'll tell you where to place your logo on a page so it's always exactly the same. And they'll give you these sort of basic guidelines, which becomes like the package of how you roll everything visually. You never have to think about it again. You just hand it over to whoever's working with you. And then you have consistency across the board creatively, like visually for your company.
And you don't have to question it, right? You have those brand guidelines that you're constantly sticking to. You have the strategy. You have the social strategy. You understand the content points. It doesn't become a question all the time, because when you don't handle branding as a small business or medium-sized business or large business, you always think about it. So all that brain space that it takes up that you're not doing it versus doing it, planning it, organizing it, and strategizing it, it doesn't have that power anymore. It just works for you, right? But that does take some investment.
Mm-hmm. Yes. When would you recommend a rebrand as opposed to a refresh?
I almost always would recommend a rebrand slash a refresh or repositioning if it's a pre-existing successful company. You know, a rebrand, a full rebrand, can be highly impactful on the business and on the pre-existing clients and very unstabilizing. So you almost always want to move into the refresh realm if you're pre-existing, unless you're wiping out your complete business model and building something else. Because there's so much that can be done with through design language, right, and through brand strategy that just instills even more trust with your current client base. It shows that, wow, you've expanded, you've put some money into beautiful design work, into UX design, so on and so forth. And that's usually almost always what I recommend.
Have you, Bliss, since you started your business and the visual, sort of the visual representation of your business online, have you done any kind of rebranding or refreshing, or have you pretty much been consistent since you started with your look?
My look has changed a lot. But there was always the same core since I've been making jewelry, because each time I started as a handbag designer and transitioned into jewelry, so there was a considerable change aesthetically. But at the same time, there was a slide that we had when we were teaching the Centering Your Brand that was a slide from 2010 and then a slide from my 2017 campaign that I haven't launched yet. And they were quite symbiotic. So I think my aesthetic has always been the same. And so I haven't had to do a really intense rebrand, but I did do, essentially my rebrand was a refresh more than anything.
And I think when you're the designer and you're the maker, your person hasn't changed, right? Your evolution is there, but you're not, I mean, maybe sometimes you're becoming a whole new person, but oftentimes you're just evolving. And, you know, I've had my consultancy for 11 years and I've done the same thing. I've evolved, right? And I'm still evolving. I'm constantly in the process of evolving. So
I've just loved how your ways of thinking can be so, can prod new ideas, because as when Jasmine and I spoke on the phone, I was telling her we were in the middle of a Hawaii Public Radio fund drive, and those are the moments when you start wondering if there are different and possibly better ideas out there. And, you know, Jasmine out of nowhere starts saying, well, you know, you have to start really thinking about the model. I mean, maybe there's a way to make the same amount of money in one night. And I thought, wow.
Well, she put me on hold and I was listening to the fundraising campaign. And when you called me in New York, it was the very end of my day and it was a Friday and I had had a really intense week. And I just sat down and, you know, because this work is so close to my heart and so important to me, very focused. And I was on hold for a bit and I thought, why are they still doing it this way? I don't understand. So I asked.
We're trying to think of something different.
Yeah, and I think that you know, it's very hard for institutions, right? Public radio is an institution.
How would public radio start?
Right. Well, you know, just quickly to my point is that, you know, without public radio, I actually wouldn't be who I am, and I wouldn't be the thinker I am, because I grew up every morning of, you know, when I was a child listening to public radio, NPR, every morning, you know, and then it, into my adulthood, and public radio has shaped the way I think. And I, you know, as a strategist, seeing, okay, you're still doing fundraising drives, right, and having your MCs talk over and over about please engage in this way. Well, it may not even be possible for people to pick up the phone and give their credit card anymore. It, like, literally might not be possible in the way that we live now, right? So what do we do with that? Looking at habits of our clientele, right? I absolutely give money to NPR and will continue to give money to NPR, but I would really like to step into an experience for one night, and maybe it's a $10,000 ticket or $5,000 ticket or $1,000 tickets, and they're just different buy-ins of an experience that I can have where it allows me to connect to community, it allows me to give money, it allows me to share that experience on social media, to talk about how important your message is, because I then become the ambassador, right? So if I call on a telephone and give you my credit card, I'm not your ambassador. You're not actually utilizing me and my donation. If I come to an event or I'm experiencing something, it then goes on social media, right? And then I say I'm an ambassador of, because I'm part of it. I'm connecting to it, you know? So.
Boy, following that train of thought alone could take us some places.
Yes.
There's been some tough talk tonight disguised as some really gentle prodding.
Well, I mean, I owe it to NPR. I probably wouldn't be asking these questions if I wasn't raised with NPR. So,
well, look, if traditional advertising is not working these days, it's got to say something about us. And that I think, is worth thinking about, you know, because we're quite a different beast these days. Vivaciously individual, and yet so very connected. And it's a beautiful place to be, I think. Thank you so much, you two, for pointing it out.
It's our pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Did you have another question?
Yeah, in the way that you're a dynamic human being. So I do Brand Human Talks monthly in Los Angeles and New York, right? And I've sort of set this goal for myself to do this so I build a lot of content. What this has done for me over the last year has exposed me to so many incredible human beings doing different things, right? And one of the things that have come out of it is this real anxiety and fear to be more than one thing. Right? Of like, I'm a painter, but then I'm a copywriter, but then, right, what I was talking about. And it's all in the positioning of it, right? So it's all in the language, and then it's all in the content strategy. So how you own those things in relationship to each other is the power. So if you don't own them, you do let other people say, she's only kind of doing this and kind of doing this. Ease that anxiety by trying to position them together. And understanding that you are dynamic, and you may want to do a couple different things well, right? We're not in the generation anymore where we can plug and play into our careers, right? If you come out of school right now and you want to be a lawyer, there's no guarantee you're going to stay in that career for 30 years. And there's absolutely no guarantee you're going to have insurance the whole time. So what is this idea of insurance become, or, you know, stabilization of your career? You stabilize you. You decide perception value. You decide what people think, right? So if you decide people think you're flaky because you do three things, that's what people are going to think, right? But if you say, no, my painting in relationship to my strategy, they actually help each other. I'm going to talk about that process. I'm going to show that process. I'm going to think about that process. Maybe they don't help each other, and maybe one of the things you don't want to do anymore, too. That's equally as helpful, right? But I believe we're in a new world with new models, and we have the opportunity to claim these things and claim how dynamic we can be as humans, and that they all help each other. You know, they can help each other. It doesn't have to be this one thing anymore. There's no industry we can plug into anymore. So why not define self as self, you know?
What do you do?
Yeah.
yoga teacher, painter, graphic designer.
Mm-hmm.
For someone like that, how do you look for the overarching brand?
Well, you're doing all those things for a reason. So usually there's a common thread, you know. Perhaps your asana movement helps with the lines of your drawings for your logo designs or your graphic designs because you understand the body and you understand the physical movement, and perhaps there's a way to talk about that.
They all sound really similar to me.
Yeah, they all sound totally similar. But for Bliss and I, you know, we think about this stuff a lot, so we don't really see a lot of separation between if a person is naturally drawn to yoga, graphic design, and painting. They are similar. You know, it's just also, if you look at the last slide that we gave you, can you prove it? Is it true? Does it serve your brand? You know, if you're looping over and over, these things don't connect, these two things don't connect, they probably won't, because you're blocking them from connecting. You know, a good friend of mine, Elizabeth Traina, who's a healer, kind of talks about that a lot, right? We have to, like, move these blocks. Is it true? Is this stuff real, right? Because it does affect the entrepreneurial journey, what we loop in our head. And I just said to you, like, that's not flaky. And you just said to me, I'm one of those flaky people, you know? And really paying attention to that, you know, we, in centering your brand, because we work on this all the time, hold your power, hold what you do, and understand that you do have an offer and that you do have an ask, and these are polarities that you're working with, right? But it's easy for us to self-criticize all the time, or to sort of, you know, that's the easier route. The harder route is to figure out, how do I say what I want to say about myself in a way that feels good quickly? Not a pitch. Not an elevator pitch. I don't like that language. It feels manipulative. But in a way that's true. In a way that lands in the body. You're a yoga teacher. You understand grounding fundamentally. So how do you take that same principle and move it into how you talk about yourself? You know?
What might some answers be to what is your offer?
How about somebody in the audience answer that? What do you offer?
Network connection.
Network, he offers. What do you ask?
Same. Introductions, connections. I have a problem, not how can I solve this. So if somebody calls me, I might not have the answer, but I know I can find somebody. So I'll go to that person.
He finds introductions and connections. He offers that and asks for that.
Oftentimes they're the same.
Really?
That's what's really interesting about it.
Huh.
It's like the very thing you're seeking is the very thing you are.
Hmm.
I'm a teacher. I offer expertise. I offer opportunity. And I ask engagement.
This teacher offers opportunity and asks for engagement. We all ask for engagement. Isn't that what we're doing?
True.
I don't know. A lot of us hide. A lot of us don't want engagement. You know, that's oftentimes that's the sort of interesting thing we're dealing with, social media, or look at the political landscape of how many people don't want to use their name, but they want to comment. You know, there's oftentimes we're not wanting to expose ourselves. I think that that's an epidemic in a way, that we have these vehicles that allow us to talk and shout and put about a bunch of content, but don't make us own it. You know, we can be anonymous or we can be, you know, hidden.
The question for Bliss, you mentioned it may be 4 or 5 hours before you hit that sweet spot of the idea for the day. Does it come with the marketing and branding attached?
God, I hope it doesn't. That would be terrible, I think. I think that, well, my process changes, and I have a lot of different ways that I get inspired. Sometimes I go to my studio and I do actually parse out my day. Like, I will go to my office or to my design studio when I know no one is there. Sunday afternoons, wonderful. It's like secret time. And I'll just sit with a bunch of books and I'll just look at things. And I think a lot of it, because I've had a business for a long time, goes back to where my core is and what initially inspired me. And so I'll look through sometimes my older designs. And a lot of times I'll just read books and look through visuals and get inspired. Or just the most potent way that I find creativity is through play. So I'll just start playing with different things. And if that means I'm mocking things up with paper or something like that, and I'll have little failures in the process. Oh, I made this thing. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And finally I'll get to something. And a lot of times I realize almost retroactively what the inspiration was. And I think the creativity can come from such a core place sometimes that you don't always know where it came from. And you have to sit back and look at it and ask yourself, how did I get there? Where did that thing come from? And then I can realize that it's from these other elements. And so in that way, the marketing comes from such a deep place that I wouldn't necessarily note at the time. And then I contextualize it afterwards.
I think from observing bliss and, you know, we were just talking about this yesterday, and maybe you want to speak to it a little bit. You know, she is very planned in, you know, who she's going to shoot with, to do what photography, to think about what content, you know, that is really thoughtful. She's very thoughtful in that process. But we were also talking about business development, right? And growing and being entrepreneurs, and the fact that we have to funnel the money into our business. If we're not doing that and we're not working on that systems and understanding all of that, it doesn't happen. Right? So where does creativity's place in that and remembering that?
There's so much pressure to be creative sometimes. And there's pressure because, you know, you have to pay your staff and you have to do all these things. And there's all these emails and they're piling up. And sometimes I think I just need to say goodbye to all of that. And again, goes back to play. Just let myself have fun, because otherwise I can't come up with good ideas.
Yeah, there's no business without the creativity. But there's no business if you don't put your time into building your business, right? And we both deal with that, you know. On one arm, I'm delivering a creative brief, an entire brand strategy for our company, but I'm also having to deal with staffing and taxes and, right? So how to train your brain, where do those things go? And also constantly check in and go, when was the last time I looked at my goal set? Where do I want to be, right? Practicing what we preach. And I think part of why we both teach and why we both look at our method a lot is so that we stay true to it. You know, it really helps us have a natural check-in.
I really believe in inspiration trips too. Just totally getting completely out of your zone and doing something that inspires you that is different. And sometimes you can lace that in with work, sometimes you can't. But I do that a few times a year. Just allow yourself this moment to do that. It's wonderful.
Because being comfortable, again, that can breed dullness, right? Or trips with other people, or trips to document. Sometimes, like, just making a trip to make the trip and, like, being human and having your human experience can be quite profound.
I keep coming back to authenticity, I guess, and remembering that what we're embarking on now is communication based on authenticity much more than any kind of sales pitch. Mm-hmm. Any clues for getting to that personal authenticity?
Well, I think, you know, that's why I developed the Brand Human Principles, right? They help you get there. They help you start to, you know, ask the questions. I've been criticized for not giving enough answers, and we were recently talking about that, where someone was like, you know, Jasmine just doesn't give me all the answers in when she does Brand Human, and it's like, oh, fabulous.
It's up to you to find the answers.
I don't like doing that, right? I'm never going to do that. I really love asking the right questions and then having you get to the answer when I'm lecturing, right? When I'm your strategist, it's maybe a different situation. But how do you get to authentic voice? How do you build authenticity? In my opinion, you look at the Brand Human Principles and you start to see how they work into the ultimate activation of your brand.
Which is why we teach through a Socratic method, because it's really just asking yourself a series of questions to find an answer.
Yeah, and the more brilliant the questions are, the more deeply they'll shift and change things inside of you, and there's no way for Bliss and I to know what those things are, right? So when we ask you a profound question, usually there's a lot that's happening internally to get to that place of authenticity, whether that's breaking an old belief, whether that's understanding you don't want to do the service model you're doing and it needs to shift and change, understanding you need a rebrand, whatever that becomes. That's not how we hold space for our students. We hold space for our students through, listen, here's frameworks. These are all frameworks, right? And these frameworks, it's your responsibility to plug the content into these frameworks. But we build really strong frameworks, right? So we give you the foundation, but it's really up to you to build it in and fill it in further.
If you're talking about self-examination, I guess that's something we can all embark on as we leave tonight. Yeah, yes. Is the course available online?
No, not yet. You know, it's still in its infancy. You know, it's growing, and we are committed to the process, and we'll see where it goes. But right now, for our ask, we're really looking for more partners, right? Museums all over the world, affiliations that want to support the work and bring us in to change the way we think about entrepreneurship and brand building.
And ultimately, if it was offered online, it would be contradictory to what we believe it is, because you wouldn't be able to receive the community that you need in order to do it. It's taking the class doesn't mean you just coming in and getting something for yourself. It means you meeting all these other people who have a vision that's similar to yours that you can now become friends with and build a community, right? So,
and we like being there, right? We like, you know, we have businesses ourselves, right? And the reason why we shifted our model from teaching once a week in each semester at Parsons and said, this doesn't work anymore, because one, for our businesses, it didn't function to put that kind of time in. And two, we saw that, you know, learning outcomes for adults, you need to take a deep dive. And when we're there with you, we're super present. We're totally there. And big shifts happen, right? So that's a huge part of the course, isn't just sort of these things that you can, you know, the principles for Brand Human are available online, so you can look at those. You know, we do post on social. You know, we lead by example. Those are the kinds of things you can engage with us online with. But you never know what will happen, right? And how we'll build it. But we really love being in person, which is why we're so grateful to the Honolulu Art Museum and for Public Radio and to DBED for bringing us in and letting us have this experience.
But if you want to try and do something on your own, it could be nice to meet somebody or talk to someone who you think you can get an honest critique from, something that will be helpful and not hurtful.
Identify that person in your life, right? Start. That's the start of your brand. Identify, you know, find an accountability partner. We talk about that in class. Mm-hmm. You know, someone who's going to hold you accountable to your goals, give you, again, an honest critique. We're constantly doing that to each other, and sometimes it's really hard, you know, to be like, you know what, this could have been better and this is why, but that's why, you know, we're growing like we're growing, because it's not all roses, you know? It's intense growth and learning.
An accountability partner. Could be a good place to start. Well, we've reached the end of our time, and your thanks to the Honolulu Museum of Art and DBED, we echo that at Public Radio. We thank you, Jasmine Takanikos, Bliss Lau, and all of you tonight for coming. Manipulation marketing changed the world. Maybe we're part of something else. Just saying. Could be. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Let's vote.